Welcome, Wisconsin. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Tomorrow is Election Day, April 2nd. If you need to check out a sample ballot, find out where you need to vote, you can go to myvote.wi.gov, and you can listen to my next guest, an expert, Deborah Cleaver, founder of Vote.org and Vote America. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show, Deborah. Thanks so much for making time before our spring elections here in Wisconsin.
Thank you so much for having me. Tomorrow is such a fun and exciting day.
Yes, we've got the presidential primaries or preference election here. We have the movement to effectively lodge an objection vote happening here in Wisconsin. They're aiming for 20,000 folks to effectively abstain from a primary vote. Can you explain to folks what the unrestricted movement is? What's that all about? How do they understand what that is when they see it on their ballot?
It's basically a protest vote. It's people who would otherwise vote for Joe Biden in the primary, and it is their way of saying that our votes aren't guaranteed. Right now, we are lodging a protest vote against you because we want you to do something different with Gaza. So it's not a vote for Joe Biden's opponent. It is conveying a message to Joe Biden himself, and Wisconsin won't be the first state that's done this. So I imagine he's getting the message loud and clear.
Yeah, we saw a lot of unrestricted votes in the Michigan primary as well. So a bit to watch. What else should we be looking for tomorrow in terms of tea leaves and other important items that we might be looking for from a predicting what might be going on in November standpoint?
Okay, the thing that I'm most going to be looking for tomorrow is Wisconsin has same-day registration, which means that you can register and vote at the same time. There's no voter registration deadline. So if you're listening and you're not registered to vote in Wisconsin, that's okay. Bring your driver's license with you. If you don't have a driver's license, bring some sort of government-issued ID, and you can register and vote at the same time. And for me, that's really important. I run a nonpartisan organization. I've done a ton of voter registration over the years. I think I've registered 6 million people to vote. But now half the states have same-day registration. So it doesn't matter if you're not already registered. And I'm looking to see how many people take advantage of same-day registration in Wisconsin, which we all know is a very competitive state for the presidential election.
Well, let me, and on behalf of everybody listening in the Civic Media Radio Network universe, let me first begin by saying thank you for helping 6 million qualified citizens get registered to vote. It is our franchise. The only way to save democracy is through democracy. So my greatest and most emphatic thanks to you, Deborah, and your efforts to get citizens involved in who our elected leadership is. Tell me about how you came to found Vote.org and Vote America.
Oh, that is a really, okay, I'll make it very short.
Or take a long time.
No, it's actually surprisingly short. So 2000 election, I had just graduated college. I'm dating myself. I'm not a young voter. And, you know, I voted for Al Gore, and that was Gore v. Bush. And it was, you know, somewhat late at night. We were watching the polls close and watching the returns come in. And I was sitting with friends, and Florida was declared for Gore. And they assumed the election was over. Most people assumed the election was over. So they went to sleep. Literally, they went, you know, we were drinking beers. They all went to sleep and I stayed up. And so I was the only one still awake when suddenly the people in Florida found, the election officials found a box of ballots and Florida flipped red. And it seemed like in real time there were shenanigans happening. And those of us who are not young voters remember how this happened. It went to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court stopped the count. And it felt very much at the time like there were shenanigans. But what really stood out to me was that turnout was so low that you could potentially rig a presidential election with a single county in America. And I thought, well, turnout should be so high that whoever wins has a decisive victory. So I started an organization called Swing the State. in 2004, and we were part of a nationwide movement to help all these people register to vote. And turnout was still kind of low in 2004. And I thought, what if we don't have a voter registration problem in this country? What if we have a voter turnout problem? And my next organization was called Long Distance Voter. That launched in 2008. And the goal was to help people who were already registered to vote, but couldn't vote in person and needed to get an absentee ballot. And I mean, now this is so crazy, but the internet was silent on how to get an absentee ballot. You would Google and there'd be nothing there. So we built Long Distance Voter. We got very good at search engine optimization. And so if you were looking on for directions on how to get an absentee ballot, you found us. And you know, within a few years, we were the first hit on Google for everything: early voting, voter ID information. We added a voter registration tool. In 2012, we accidentally ran one of the country's biggest voter registration drives. We registered 100,000 people that year on $1,000. And no one knew this in the civic engagement space. It was my hobby. I had a day job. Like, I had a full-time day job. This was just what I was doing, you know, to blow off steam. And ultimately, Long Distance Voter became vote.org, which everyone knows now, very big organization. But since 2008, I have focused on helping already registered voters cast ballots. And as part of that, just focused a little bit on voter registration. And that's the irony. As far as I know, no one in this country has registered more voters than I have, and no one has spent less time or money on it. People want to register to vote. 80% of the country is registered to vote today. It's just that it's harder to cast a ballot in the United States than any other nation with democratically elected leadership. But now we have things like same-day registration in Wisconsin. Wisconsin's actually trying to help you vote. They're saying, look, it's okay. It's okay if you miss the online deadline to show up on election day with a government issued ID. You need to, you know, establish that you live in Wisconsin, that you are who you say you are. I should add, if your license has the wrong address on it, like you moved, just bring like a utility bill, something like that. So now, you know, we just focus really on helping people cast ballots. We're having a good time, with that.
Why is it so hard for people to vote here in the United States? You shared some information, some data with me before you came on. 80% of Americans, as you just noted, Deborah, already registered to vote. But even the best voter registration turnout drives don't really produce more than a 1-point boost in turnout. So why is it so damn hard here for people to vote?
I've got a few reasons. First, we've got 50 different sets of rules to vote in the same election. No other country has 50 different sets of rules. If you're voting in France, there's one set of rules. Also, our election day changes every year. If election day were always November 15th, we would know when the election was, like taxes. Those actually, it's funny, those are the two things that come to mind for me. We have 50 different sets of rules for everything. The rules for registering, the rules for acceptable ID, the rules for where you can go. In Colorado, you go to any polling center. In Wisconsin, you have to go to a designated polling place. We vote during the winter. Why do we vote in winter? No one wants to wait outside. We vote during the work week. In some states, I live in California, we're lucky. We have the best system of voting. The government mails us our ballots. And California has some of the highest turnout in the nation. We have higher turnout than any battleground state because all we need to do is return our ballots. So it's just complicated. Oh, I've got a fun stat for you. Someone, I think it was the Pew Research Center, surveyed Americans in October 2016 to see if they knew the date of the election, and 40% of Americans did not know the date of the election, and 41% of Americans didn't vote. So we run these massive informational campaigns. You may have seen our billboards in Wisconsin over the years, or Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, just all the billboards just tell you the date of the election. That's it. People are always asking me my secret sauce. And the single best predictor of whether or not you're going to vote isn't enthusiasm. It's if you know the date of the election. So if you gave me one wish, one magic wish, I would standardize the date of the election. I would say it's always November 15th. Doesn't matter if it's a Saturday or Sunday. We're always going to vote on the same day.
It's amazing. Sometimes simple, straightforward ideas are incredibly effective. I often warn people against the really simple ideas for complex problems, right? The simple answers for complex problems are rarely right. But this is actually a straightforward problem, and that is voter turnout, not framed in terms of engagement of partisan bases and all of that. Simply, do you know the day? Well, let's share with everybody the dates of the election. Tomorrow, April 2nd, is our spring November election, and our fall November election is November 5th.
Yes. And I just want to say, for anyone who can't see Maggie's face, you had to think about it for a second. And this is what we do. So the fact that we do this, this is all I do. It's my full-time job. And I still have to think about when the date of the election is.
Because I don't want to get it wrong. So the fall election is November 5th. It's a Tuesday. Mark your calendars. I like to call people, my friends, ping them like, do you have a plan to vote? Have you scheduled time? If you're voting in person, not absentee or other early voting mechanisms, make a plan. Let your employer know if you need some time off to vote, because we have made it so difficult from merely a logistical perspective. How do you get there? Do you know when to go? Do you have enough time? How long are the lines? Can we process folks in our largest voting districts in a timely fashion? Those variations on theme in different states, depending on the different sets of rules, more or less acute, which also seems to be a bit of an equity issue to me, that it's easier to vote in certain places versus others. You can, you know, extrapolate as you wish from there. I want to talk more, Deborah, about what we can do to get people to turn out when we come back after these really important messages. I'm joined by the founder of Vote.org and Vote America, a woman that we all owe a debt of gratitude to for getting us to be better voters and better folks actually turning out and voting during election cycles. So keep it locked. More with Deborah Cleaver, founder of Vote.org, after these important messages here on The Maggie Dawn Show. I am Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you have a question for a woman who knows more about elections and voter turnout than I could possibly hope to acquire in my entire lifetime, you can give us a call or text at 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Hello to Deshaun Long. Hello, Sherry, listening in from Horicon. Thank you for tuning in. You can see those facial expressions that Deborah mentioned during the last segment. If you want to watch our video stream live on YouTube, the platform formerly known as Twitter, as well as Facebook, you can find us there under The Maggie Dawn Show. Deborah Cleaver, founder of Vote.org and Vote America. We've been talking about the fact that registration, while important, and the fact that you can do that same day here in Wisconsin, bring a driver's license, other government-issued photo ID, and if your address on that ID isn't correct, whatever piece of billing information that has your current address on it to your polling place, you can get registered same day. If you don't know where your polling place is, you can go to myvote.wi.gov. You can also check out sample ballots that you will be seeing tomorrow in your voting booth. But other than voter registration, we've really been talking about turnout. I also find it interesting to compare voter turnout levels in the United States and other Western democracies, because we're low by that metric as well, embarrassingly so in many instances. But what can actually help drive turnout other than, you know, the partisan, we got to appeal to the base and get the independent, all that sort of punditry aside, from just getting people to show up, One, we talked about knowing the date, spring election tomorrow, fall election Tuesday, November 5th. That's a big piece. What else helps drive turnout, Deborah?
The single most effective way to drive turnout is to sign people up to vote by mail. People who receive their ballots in the mail are significantly more likely to actually cast a ballot because all they have to do is return it. And once that ballot is on your kitchen table, 20 partisan groups will follow up with you to remind you to return it. And I'm going to get just a little bit nerdy, but I feel like
Please.
Your audience will be okay with that. So we started at Vote America, we actually started to look into this. We found two things. First, the states that have universal vote by mail, that's Colorado, Oregon, Washington, Utah, Hawaii. I am forgetting one right now. I'm so sorry.
California.
California. Yes, where
I
live.
I'm here to help, Deborah.
All of those states have higher turnout than all of the battleground states. And it's not because candidates come to our states. It's not because we see TV ads. It's because we get our ballots in the mail. So we have the highest turnout rates in America. But then we actually started to look at states that have, God, there's so many names for this. Most people call it Pebble, rhymes with Pebble. No, I did not invent this name. It's not a good one. But that means you can sign yourself up to get your ballots in the mail. And when we look at turnout between registered voters who vote in person and registered voters who get their ballot in the mail, the people who receive their ballots in the mail, that increases turnout 10 to 30 points
Wow.
over people who vote in person. If you don't know what points are, that's okay. The difference between 61% and 65% is 4 points. That stands for percentage points. So basically what we saw in the states where some people get their ballots in the mail and some people don't, we saw 74% of people who were getting their ballots in the mail actually returning those ballots versus like 45% of the people who vote in person. I've been doing this work for 20 years. I've never seen anything like that. It is the single most effective way to increase turnout is get those people you know who are registered, maybe aren't voting consistently, to just get sign up to vote by mail. In Wisconsin, you have to do it for every election. So, you know, it's unfortunately not permanent, but we're probably going to run a drive to get people to sign up for the November election. But there are so many other states where you can sign yourself up. Arizona, Nevada, Michigan, New Mexico, these are all places where you can just sign up once and receive all of your ballots in the mail. And then for the states like Wisconsin that have same-day registration, don't spend any more time running voter registration drives there. Just make sure people know that they can register on election day. It's like, you know, we only have so much money for all of these campaigns, and you might as well spend the money where it has the greatest impact. And I run charities, so we don't have the same budgets as Joe Biden or Donald Trump. So we're very careful to spend our money where it has the highest impact. Sorry, that was all very long-winded.
No.
I'm a super nerd. I'm a super nerd. You know, this is what I do.
You're in really good company with the super nerddom here. I'll just say that. Anya's shaking her head vigorously. We like to wonk out. Just to summarize for people, there are six states in the country that have automatic statewide vote by mail. In other words, every registered voter gets a ballot by mail. They can return it by mail. In Arizona, Nevada, New Mexico, and Michigan, you can sign up once and permanently receive. It sounds, you're looking at me like I got something wrong.
No, I'm pulling the states right now.
Oh, okay. Good. And then Arizona, Nevada, Michigan, what other states? You can sign up once and then for the rest of your life, get a ballot by mail. What are those other states,
Deborah?
Ready?
Yes. Montana, Arizona, New Mexico, Minnesota, Illinois, Michigan, New Jersey, Virginia, Maryland. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 states where you sign up once and you get your ballot in the mail forever. And because that was potentially a lot for people to memorize, if you go to research.voteamerica.com, all of our research is there. And you can see like what happened when we started to look at this. You can also honestly email me.
I love it. What's your email, Deborah, if people have questions about this?
Yeah, Deborah@voteamerica.com. I am, in fact, our customer service at Vote America, or just email help@voteamerica.com. One of us will help you out. But lots of people just email me directly. But there are 9 states now, and we're hoping that by the next presidential election, it will be all of them. Yeah, or at least there'll be significantly more.
It just makes sense. It's easier for people. You can do it in the comfort of your own home. You can Google what you need to about referendum questions that are confusing or you don't know what they mean. You can Google candidates. You can take your time with your ballot. I think a lot of people in the voting booth actually can get a little freaked out if they don't know what's going on. They don't know if they can ask folks, wait a minute, what is this? I don't know how to fill this out. So you can take your time if you go ahead and get that mail-in ballot. Again, in the state of Wisconsin, if you wish to vote mail-in this November, you're going to have to do so and request that mail-in ballot at least 3 months ahead of time. I recommend 3 months ahead of time as soon as that window opens. You can't do it now. Okay, it's got to be in proximity to that fall election. So about 2-3 months ahead of time, request that ballot, get it, sit down with your Google machine or your preferred search engine so you know what the heck you're voting for, and then send it in plenty early. They will get counted. Deborah, can you stick around for a little bit more with us?
I can.
Wonderful. I am joined by Deborah Cleaver, founder of Vote.org and Vote America. If you have questions or comments, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Join us with one of the great voter registration and voter turnout experts in the United States, responsible for more registrations herself than any other living human being, 6 million to date. Our great guest, Deborah Cleaver. Keep it locked. The farm update and other news up next here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
I got a couple terminations in my past, yeah. Gotta ask my bosses for a day off.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn, joined this hour by Deborah Cleaver, founder of Vote.org and Vote America, talking all things elections, especially voter turnout. You were talking before the break. If you're on the lines, by the way, stay there. I'm going to take a couple callers. If you got questions for Deborah, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. We were talking before the break about mail-in ballots and getting mail-in ballots. It's a huge driver of turnout for both sides of the aisle. It works for both parties. So what has I don't understand the weird hang-ups that people have about mail-in ballots. Where did all of that come from?
Okay, first of all, I just want to say that people have been voting by mail since the Civil War, and it is how the entire military votes. And somewhat ironically, given the way things are going right now, it was historically how Republicans voted. When I started long distance voter, almost all of our traffic came from conservative groups. I wound up on the phone with the RNC saying, we're getting a ton of traffic for you. What's this about? And the person who was, I honestly can't remember his name now, this was so long ago, but he was the head of mobilization for the Republican National Committee. And he said, well, Republicans have always invested in vote by mail and signing up registered Republicans to vote by mail because it increases turnout so much. It's a really great way to make sure your supporters vote. And then Donald Trump, kind of out of nowhere, went on this war path against voting by mail in 2020, which was also really interesting because some of you may remember there was a pandemic.
Oh, yeah. There was something going on, a little public health problem.
This whole like airborne deadly pandemic. And so, you know, a lot of people were really uncomfortable about being outside, being with other people. So, and I mean, I normally wouldn't name someone like this, but that's where it comes from. Donald Trump, who was a Republican president, is currently the presumptive Republican nominee, was telling people not to vote by mail, even though that is the Republicans' preferred method of voting. And he you know, was attacking the security. Quick rundown of voting by mail and why it's so secure. First of all, you need to be a registered voter in order to request
your ballot.
A ballot. And in order to register, you either need to provide your driver's license or your social security number, and a local election official needs to verify all of that information. So first, you need to be registered. Second, you need to sign up to vote by mail. Then when your ballot comes, you need to sign it. And that signature is compared to your signature on file from when you registered to vote. The post office won't deliver a ballot if the person whose name is on the ballot isn't also the name on the mailbox. I mean, the post office knows if you moved. Every ballot has a barcode on it. So it's scanned when it goes out. It's scanned when it comes back in. There are so many security measures in place when it comes to vote by mail. Also, it's actually paper, you know, versus some of these voting machines that historically, there have been issues with voting machines. In 2004, it came to light that a bunch of voting machines had been sent to Ohio that pre-shipped with votes recorded on them. Voting hadn't started yet, but the machines had a counter on them showing the number of votes, and they all had votes on them already. Voting on a piece of paper is the single most secure way to vote, and voting by mail is secure. I mean, we trust the post office to deliver the ID that we then use to verify our identity when we vote. We trust the post office to mail our social security checks to us. We trust the post office to mail critical medications to us. The post office is actually the single most trusted government agency in America. If we found out the post office was in charge of administering elections, we'd be happy. So the idea that the post office is suddenly not trustworthy, that is unfortunately an untrue statement made repeatedly by Donald Trump, much to the annoyance of the leaders, well, now former leaders of the Republican National Committee.
Well, you heard it here. Again, voting by mail, arguably, if not just as secure, more secure than voting in person. It has been that way for a very long time. And it was very interesting to me in this cycle, many local and state Republican parties have re-embraced or embraced anew voting by mail. Again, you can do that in Wisconsin. You have to request it for every election cycle. You can check that out about 3 months before the election. I suggest doing so as quickly as possible. You get the ballot. You can sit there. You can ruminate over it. You can hand wring, clutch your pearls, whatever your preferred version of angst is, and then finally cast your ballot and send it in. We've got one of our regular listeners on the phone, Karina from Milwaukee. Say hello to Deborah. What's your question or comment? Hi, Karina, you're on the air. Hi, Karina, you're on the air.
Hi, guys. Welcome back, Maggie. I hope your vacation was great.
Thank you.
And warm compared to what's going on in Wisconsin. My thing is, I know it's a little bit off the subject, although it's for the Tuesday, coming up Tuesday. How you guys feel about that undescribe, unsufficient, undetermined. Doesn't it sound like silly to do?
So she's asking, we started the top of the hour talking about the unrestricted option in the presidential primaries. Just a brief recap, it's effectively a protest vote for people who would likely otherwise be inclined to vote for President Biden. We hope likely will. I'm saying that, not Deborah, this coming fall. Registering a bit of protest, sending a message to President Biden that they want him to toughen up on Israel, specifically not Israel writ large, but mostly on President Netanyahu and his approach to the conflict that is ongoing in Gaza. Am I getting any of that wrong, Deborah? Anything you want to add on those unrestricted boxes that you can, or here in Wisconsin, little ovals that you can fill in the ballot box?
No, just because you're a registered Democrat doesn't mean you need to vote for the Democratic candidate in the primary. And it's a very effective way of communicating with a candidate, because no one is saying that they're going to vote for a different candidate. They're just letting the president, and he is the president, in addition to being a candidate for office, know that they'd like to see some changes with regard to Netanyahu. And I will say, so would the citizens of Israel.
Yeah,
War is not good. No one wants to be at war.
It's interesting. There are so many. I did do a show right after the October 7th attacks talking about some of the troubling historical parallels between Benjamin Netanyahu and the former MAGA president here in the United States. And I think it is incumbent upon all of us to remember that the elected official of a nation often doesn't represent the entire populace of that nation from a foreign policy standpoint. There may be different agendas at issue. So that's thing one. Thing two is political parties are political parties. Political platforms are political platforms. And regardless of those political or foreign policy positions that are adopted by elected leaders, the people of those countries deserve, as does every human, to be able to live in peace and safety, and movements towards that and encouraging that by elected leadership need to be supported, no matter where that's coming from. To be perfectly plain about it, President Netanyahu doesn't speak for every single Israeli resident and citizen, just like Hamas does not speak for every Palestinian. Those are not necessarily analogous, and I don't mean to suggest that. One is an identified terrorist group. One is an elected president, although one who has been very criticized for his actions in response to October 7th. Lots of complicated stuff there in response to a pretty simple question from Karina. What the heck is the unrestricted vote and what does it mean? It is a protest vote, a sending of a message to President Biden about the conflict that continues to go on in Gaza. I wanted to ask you, since you're here, Deborah, and we've had a couple of opportunities to have a chat, there's been a lot of news in the last couple of days because Christine Blasey Ford has been on sort of the media circuit. She's got a book out. Lots of attention being paid to Ms. Blasey Ford. And I read what to me was an incredibly disturbing op-ed by Kathleen Parker in The Washington Post, who basically said Christine Blasey Ford is no hero, and proceeded in many ways as sort of a meta defense of Kavanaugh, if you will. That's kind of a high level and attacked Ms. Blasey Ford's credibility. I just wanted, you've been really engaged in politics. You obviously paid attention during 2018 during the confirmation hearings. What was your impression when the confirmation hearings were going on, both as to Brett Kavanaugh's testimony and Ms. Blasey Ford's?
I'm just thinking, I'm glad I haven't read that op-ed yet. No one, this woman, we should not expect citizens to be our heroes. I would say that I was very surprised by Brett Kavanaugh's behavior during the confirmation hearings. I have hired a number of people over the years. I think I've actually hired about 100 people over the past 8 years, and none of them have cried or shouted or otherwise behave unprofessionally during a job interview. So I was very surprised to see Brett Kavanaugh behave that way. And I was even more surprised to see him getting the job after behaving in a way that made me wonder about his emotional stability. But at the same time, there were very serious questions about his finances. Mm-hmm. He had, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in credit card debt that were mysteriously paid off. And we never actually got an answer as to who paid his credit card debt. So I have concerns as to where exactly all this money came from. I mean, you know, I feel like I'd always had concerns about Clarence Thomas. He seemed to have a pretty luxurious lifestyle for someone who makes like a relatively modest sum of money. And now we found out it's because people with cases in front of the court pay him or buy him things, like buy him a house, pay his nephew's tuition, his niece's tuition. I can't remember exactly what it was. So I'm not going to comment on anyone who isn't a sitting Supreme Court justice right now. But I would say that I have pretty serious concerns that people sit on the Supreme Court and might be compromised.
And I think that's, before I brought you on, Deborah, I talked about that as a lawyer and someone who served in government, I'll never be a Supreme Court justice because I don't think I meet the criterion. And to me, the criterion are twofold when you're observing someone's behavior as well as their financial circumstances. And that is, you have to have someone whose behavior meets the highest possible of all conceivable standards. That includes their financial dealings, their financial entanglements. I've made the argument that the standard for Supreme Court justice in terms of their conduct and behavior is arguably, should be, arguably, higher than even the President of the United States, because they sit for a lifetime and they define your rights and mine and everybody else's freedoms. It's the highest court in the land. They wield, I think, over a lifetime more power than an individual president arguably can, even over two terms. And secondly, I've made an argument that in addition to the behavioral conduct standard, if you will, that the evidentiary standard needn't be all that high because of that same set of reasons, the power that is wielded, the influence, and ensuring that the court, the highest court in the land, can be free from effectively comprobat or compromising information or financial pressures for those nine justices is absolutely paramount. And yet we have not just one, but potentially two Supreme Court justices that have questionable and unanswered questions surrounding who actually has cut them checks or give them indirectly significant financial benefits. A little bit shocking to me. I also think that if you go to that first standard of conduct and behavior, I couldn't agree with you more, Deborah, that Brett Kavanaugh's conduct in that hearing was below any conceivable standard for a Supreme Court justice. I hope you can come back sometime, Deborah. It's been a real pleasure having you. Thanks so much for being here on The Maggie Dawn Show.
I would love to come back. This was so much fun.
We will do it a couple more times, certainly before the November election. Again, Deborah Cleaver, my guest this hour, founder of Vote.org and Vote for Vote America. Go to Vote.org and check out all they've got there, including research.voteamerica.com. Thanks so much, Deborah. It's been a real pleasure. Keep it locked, everybody. More in just a few.
Telling these tears, go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames.
Freedom, welcome back, freedom. Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I was joined this hour by Deborah Cleaver, the founder of Vote.org and Vote America, expert on voter turnout and voter registration. I learned a ton, Anya. I don't know about you.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot in there I had no idea about. And the idea that she's registered six million people. And hired 100 people. I mean, this is somebody with a real depth of experience. So great stuff.
Absolutely. So important. Many states do this better than we do it here when it comes to getting folks to vote, which should be the highest levels of voter turnout should be the objective of all Americans. That's what our system should be designed to do, is get people voting. Colorado, Oregon, Washington, Utah, Hawaii, and California, they have universal mail-in voting. Everybody that's registered to vote in one of those six states, you get a ballot. I don't know why we don't have that here. Instead, what we have tomorrow are two baloney referendum questions being shoved down Wisconsin voters' throats by the state GOP gerrymandered legislature. These two referenda are ridiculous, I'll just say, because of the motivations behind them. The motivations from the Republican Party in the state of Wisconsin is to make it harder for Wisconsinites to vote. I'll be voting tomorrow no on both of the referenda questions. Don't be fooled by how innocuous these referendum questions sound. The first one says there can't be any private grants given to that are used in election administration. That sounds fine. 27 states have similar bans. Here's why it's not fine. Because the GOP gerrymandered state legislature has drained state funding from local elections officials so that election administration in our biggest jurisdictions is underfunded. I would say to those that promote and want to vote yes on the referendum, that that would be a fine constitutional amendment if it came with a companion constitutional amendment that required state funding of elections in some proportion that relates to the voter turnout and populations in those districts. We are underfunding election administration in our largest voting districts. That is anti-democratic, small d. Vote no, in my opinion, on the private money question that you'll see on the referendum tomorrow. The second one is even worse. It's a constitutional amendment that we don't need. It says basically only those that are legally authorized to administer elections can administer elections. Say what? The Wisconsin legislature's own nonpartisan lawyers don't even know what that one means. Because that's already the case. And that, in companion with the ban on any private money, results in making it harder for the large jurisdictions to administer elections. Why? Because the GOP gerrymandered state legislature won't let elections officials start counting mail-in ballots before Election Day. So if you are an election official in Milwaukee County, in Dane, Kenosha, Racine, up in Green Bay, La Crosse, these bigger areas, it makes it really hard for you to get through all of the mail-in ballots, which is becoming more and more popular for both parties following COVID, which we know from Deborah Cleaver, mail-in ballots is the way to drive turnout. If we believe in small d democracy and having the voice of the people heard, we should want to promote mail-in voting. These two referenda, paired with the GOP gerrymandered legislature refusal to permit the counting of mail-in ballots before Election Day, make all of that harder. It makes it harder for people to have their vote counted because it results in longer lines, fewer people administering elections, fewer people able to count ballots, and less money to fund the local election administration that benefits each and every one of us, regardless of party. So let's see these referendum questions for what they are. These are good faith attempts to shore up our election systems. These are partisan hatchet jobs designed to confuse and mislead you into thinking that you're helping Wisconsin's election processes. They do nothing of the sort. Nothing of the sort. Carmela from Milwaukee just checking in. Thank you for the shout out. I also heard from Grandma Penny when we were talking about Justice Kavanaugh's confirmation hearings. Good to hear from you, Grandma Penny. I appreciate everybody checking in on that. Those are the two ballot questions. Again, I want to encourage everybody, if you don't know what your ballot is going to look like, if you haven't read through these referendum questions, you can go to civicmedia.us. We've got articles. You've got my show from March 19th talking about the referenda questions. A couple of articles written about the referenda questions on civicmedia.us. If you haven't looked at your ballot, you don't know if you've got contested judicial elections. You don't know what other local elections might be on your ballot. You can go to myvote.wi.gov and you can look at a sample ballot. Isn't that nice? You can see exactly what's going to be on it. And I would be remiss if before the end of the hour, I did not talk about three critical subject matter expert elections that are going to happen in the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County. Again, even if you don't live in these jurisdictions, pay attention to these kinds of elections. I guarantee you, the elections of subject matter experts, whether they are your chief financial officers and comptrollers, city attorneys, treasurers sometimes as well, these subject matter expert offices, pay attention. They oftentimes have bigger impacts on your lives than you can even imagine. Tomorrow, the city attorney for Milwaukee, the city of Milwaukee, is up for election. You need only Google the name Tierman Spencer to understand why that man is unfit to be the city of Milwaukee city attorney. Representative Evan Goyke is running for city attorney. That's who I'll be casting my vote for. When we turn to Milwaukee County, the comptroller's election features a man who had a conflict of interest and yet insisted upon remaining on the county's pension board even after the pension scandal. Terrible. I will not be voting for Michael Harple. I will be voting for Liz Sumner, from Milwaukee County Comptroller. Last but certainly not least, a man with a bunch of credentials and experience in municipal budgeting. I will be voting for Bill Christensen for City of Milwaukee Comptroller. Little bit of a recap. City Attorney, I'll be voting for Evan Goyke. City Comptroller, Bill Christensen, and Milwaukee County Comptroller, I'll be voting for Liz Sumner. That's it for this Monday edition of the Maggie Dawn Show. I'll be back with a special Election Day show tomorrow, Tuesday. Get out there and vote, everybody. We save democracy through democracy. I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But remember, it's best when we stand together.